Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respect to elders past and present and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today.
Welcome to The Gays Are Revolting, a dissection of social and cultural issues relevant to gay men.
We put the BLT in, we put the G in LG. I'm hungry. We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you could be.
Follow us on Instagram or Twitter, or join our community on Facebook by searching The Gays Are Revolting.
And support the show and access our after shows and live streams at patreon.com/gaysrevolting.
Hello, princesses.
Hello.
How are you?
Isolation princesses, you're like tangled up in the tower. Mikey, how's your little tooth ache?
My little tooth is fine. The hole's almost closed over, which is cute. But today, the day that we're recording, which is the 2nd of July,
yeah. It
is Josh and I's 2-year anniversary. Congratulations,
yes,
to me. We made it.
This is your longest relationship, hey?
Ever. And it's my first adult relationship as well.
Well, I got to celebrate too. I've also hit a relationship landmark.
Is it like 3 days?
It's week 2. Thank you very much. We even prank phone called my dad together last night, and we accidentally drank 2 bottles of wine. But keep tuned. You guys want to do a little bet in the Facebook group about whether we'll get to 3 or 4 weeks? Let's see. Put some money on it. Maybe this is your opportunity of a lifetime.
Love it.
So I'm not sure if you guys have seen. It would be kind of hard not to, seeing as you're living in all the booger suburbs.
Shut up.
But unfortunately, so for people who are unaware, Victoria is putting a lot of their suburbs into lockdown, stage 3 lockdowns, essentially what life was like back in March. Not allowed outside their houses unless it's for work, shopping, care, or exercise.
Yes.
So there's going to be police patrolling a whole lot of neighborhoods. I think it's like 36 suburbs.
36 suburbs, and one of them is right next door to mine.
Mm. Bit of a downer. Like, Australia's really making fun of Victoria at the moment.
Oh my God.
We're the real boogers of the country. Hopefully, these suburbs can get it on track, because Dan Andrews did say it might expand to the rest of Victoria if they can't. So please, God, just get it together so we can all carry it on.
Yeah.
Living our lives.
But I was thinking about it on the tram today, and I was like, during a pandemic, you have like, it's this weird space where you have like a personal responsibility to yourself,
yes,
but you also have like a societal responsibility to the rest of the world. And we're so very rarely in that position.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in a hotspot, it fucking sucks. And it segregates us into the haves and have nots again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the best part of this fucking story, which is so funny, did you guys...
Are we talking about the security guards?
The security guards. So it was in the news.
Ridiculous.
Part of the outbreak was the fact that when they quarantined travelers in these hotels...
In their hotels, yeah.
They hired inexperienced
private
security guards who were having sex with...
Were they actually security guards, or were they like strippers dressed as security guards?
Well, there was a whole lot of stripping, baby.
Yeah.
But that was one of
That's
the causes.
Crazy.
Like, our suburbs are getting locked down because the security guards were fucking...
People be having sex.
It sounds like it was a real wild time in that hotel.
Yeah
it sounds like
people
it
were
went
really
off.
Bored. This is going to be like a Netflix movie, but like seduction. Like,
we met in the love in the time of coronavirus. That's what it's going to be called. Paul Mitzi is one of the hosts of fellow Lip Media show, What a Network, the Swapcast podcast, a unique journey. We actually met in Adelaide and we had a good chat about this. A unique journey into the wonderful world of the body swap trope. That's when Freaky Friday people, the bodies move around.
There's so many and movies.
In their inane quest to find gold in an oversaturated genre. There's not enough of those films, if you ask me. Well, thank you for finally, we met in Adelaide like a year ago, but thank you for finally coming onto our little gay show.
Thanks so much for being here, Paul. And thanks for the lift home you gave Tom and I after our Adelaide live show. It was really nice of you.
Yeah, he didn't let me in the car. Yeah, well, I didn't want to get it dirty, so.
Yeah.
And we actually have a pretty cool interview tonight with Paul. You're going to be chatting to us about some essential queer viewing we may have missed over the last year or so. But first, your podcast is pretty damn awesome. How many body swap films have you reviewed?
So we've been going for about 3 years now, and we've done 42 movies so far.
Oh, my God.
Awesome.
Yeah, we started with like kind of like the Freaky Friday ones, but we've kind of ventured out into like many different facets of the body swap film genre. So I've got like a master list that could keep us going for about another 5 years at least, and they keep making more all the time. So we'll be around forever.
Does the fly count as a body swap because he's sort of like mutating into a fly?
I guess it could be. I mean, recently we did the Velocipasta, which is about a priest that turns into a dinosaur.
Shut up. So, that's incredible.
So I guess, you know, might as well throw the fly in the list.
Tell us a couple of like sort of your favorite body swap films that you've reviewed so far. And what are some that you really want to review like right now that are your favorites as well?
Okay, so what I say when people ask me about the show is like everybody, when they go to listen, they always listen to like the Freaky Friday episode or the 13 Going on 30, because those are the movies that everyone's watched and loved. Mm-hmm. I would definitely recommend if you're going to listen to our show, find the movies that sound like they're going to be terrible, because they're usually the most entertaining episodes to listen to, because we just like love ripping movies apart.
Yeah, that's the best.
So Bad Johnson.
Yeah.
Which is a movie about a man, a womanizer who is sick of all the problems that his penis gets him into. So makes a wish and his penis actually becomes a sentient human being.
I've unfortunately seen this movie.
So you can attest to how terrible it is, I'm
yeah,
sure.
It sounds awful.
It sounds good.
So I would definitely recommend listening to that episode. Another fun one is Prelude to a Kiss. Have you guys heard of this one?
No.
It's a 90s romantic drama starring Meg Ryan and Alec Baldwin.
Love
where
her.
Meg Ryan swaps with an old man and then Alec Baldwin kind of continues a relationship with the old man. So it has like scenes of like a 30-year-old Alec Baldwin having makeout sessions with like an 80-year-old man. It's a really terrible movie. But yeah, listen to that episode.
How much oral sex is in that movie? Because
It's just nonstop.
So it's a good movie.
One that we definitely want to do on the show is Face Off. And we've that if we get 100 reviews on iTunes, we will do it. For the people that don't know, Face Off is a 90s action film directed by John Woo, where Nicolas Cage and John Travolta swap faces. It's an action classic, but it's also completely ridiculous, makes no sense. But the thing is, like, they only swap faces, but John Travolta's wife's having sex with John Travolta, which is actually Nicolas Cage with John Travolta's face, but doesn't, like, notice that his dick's changed.
He doesn't notice the whole body.
So tune in for 5 stars to be reviewing that one, guys.
Yeah.
Get around it.
So, yeah, today I'm going to be running down some movies from the last couple of years that you like queer movies that you may have not heard of. So I haven't really focused on like the big ones that, you know, have gotten awards attention. Yeah. Ones we've been talking about, like Portrait of a Lady on Fire and Pain and Glory, the Antonio Banderas films, like all films that you should all watch and are amazing. But these are maybe more under the radar films.
First, to start us off for the evening, I think one that we should highlight definitely is the documentary about Pride and 50 Years of Stonewall that has just come out recently.
Yeah, so the movie is State of Pride, which is a film you can actually watch for free on YouTube right now. It was created by YouTube. It was made by this LGBT activist, Raymond Braun. He creates a lot of content for YouTube. Yeah. It was to mark the 50-year anniversary of Stonewall and kind of chart where Pride has, what it has evolved to, especially in America and in small towns. Like a lot of small towns are getting their first ever Pride parades and what that means for the people in those towns. Yeah, it's really, really interesting documentary and really mindful to include all the different demographics and how Pride affects them. So it talks to like trans people and people sex workers. African Americans, really interestingly, a gay Mormon who then had a spinal cord injury and is now in a wheelchair. So like he's got like a really interesting, you know, history as someone who has escaped the Mormon faith, but also disabled queer people are often a demographic that's forgotten about. So yeah, really heartwarming, inspirational film, but really encompassing like a lot of the issues that are facing the queer community.
And Raymond was a guest star on the Makeover Challenge of RuPaul's Drag Race. You'll remember
yes, he was.
That episode where they made over the YouTube. Oh my god, yeah. YouTubers.
Which one is he? Like, who made him over?
He was with Asia O'Hara.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like super cute.
Love him.
I liked seeing this had quite a diverse representation because when it started off, I was like, oh shit, this better not be. Yeah, what does Pride mean to me being white 50 years later? But they they delve into a few different perspectives, which is always appreciated for a platform as big as YouTube, where it could have ended up in a Love, Simon territory of, you know, everything's perfect and everything's white as white. Although my mortal enemy appears in this one.
Yeah, Mr. Troye Sivan.
Sure. My mortal enemy. If he ever listens to this show, I'm so sorry, Troy, but there's something about you. Rubs me the wrong. I'm so sorry.
Don't worry, Troy. I'll be your friend. I like you. Luke.
Yeah, and the best thing about it, free on YouTube. Like, hell yeah. Just go and watch it now.
Especially in this COVID world where you may not be able to attend Pride events as well. It was a nice reminder of like what Pride parades and parties were like in the whole thing.
Remember drinking? Oh.
It also gave me a lot of anxiety seeing all those people touching. I was like,
oh, I know.
What is happening?
Yeah.
The next film really excited me. I feel like I'm on, you guys ever watch David and Margaret at the movies?
No.
You remember that show?
Yes, yes.
Thank you, Paul.
I actually used to be on the David and Margaret movie forum. And wow. I made so many friends on that forum that I still like see in real life.
That's so cool. Yeah.
When I went to Melbourne this year, I actually met up with people I met on the movie show forum back in like 1999. So.
Oh my god!
David and Margaret bringing people together. Oh, that's it. Paul, you've got to check them out. They're like an Australian institute. Like they've got new films for years and years, and Margaret's like this older fashionista kind of, you know, and then David's kind of this stuffy, like, I don't really like this movie's got a lot.
So what, they review like current movies coming out?
They used to be like the Roger Ebert, Siskel and Ebert kind of pair in Australia. Okay. So
I feel like that right now, but the next film, I this one stood out to me. I really can't wait to be seeing this because it's a documentary about trans sex workers from Brazil. So it's also a cultural shift from what we're used to seeing in portrayals of the LGBT community, as well as showing a little bit of how multi-layered sex work can be. It's not this black and white sort of you're forced into prostitution thing. I think these stories are really important to be sharing at the moment, showing different cultures, as well as shedding light on what sex work can actually mean for an individual and what it is like in the real life. So if you could, what's your take on our next film, Margaret?
Yeah. So, so this film's called Queen of Looper, and you can actually stream it on the distributor's website. They've made it available worldwide at the moment, which is a factory25.com. All words, no numbers, factory25.com. Oh. It's about a trans woman called Luana Muniz, who has become kind of like a cult figure in Rio. And she's been a trans sex worker since the age of 11. She's now an elderly woman. Well, she was at the time of filming this. She's now passed away since the documentary is filmed. But she's gotten to a point in her life where she was able to buy this hostel and kind of use it as a way of having all the other trans sex workers have a safe space to run their business out of.
Wow.
So she's become like a pillar in that community because, as the documentary shows, it's an extremely harsh reality for these trans women. Every time they kind of walk out the door to try to get clients, they are opening themselves up to potential violence and rape. And they all have these like stories that they just casually dole out about, you know, that time I met this guy and then he tried to choke me to death, or, you know, and it's just such a, you know, ingrained part of their life, and they've kind of resigned themselves to it in a way that, you know, I'm trans, this is the life that's available for me, this is all I can really have. But it's also not all doom and gloom, because you also see this like community and found family within this hostel that they've created for each other, that they've got that safe space and companionship with each other. So the documentary has been made in a very like cinema verite style. There's no voiceovers, there's no talking head interviews. It kind of just shows that. It shows their life. It's a snapshot of their lives and a snapshot of who Luana Muniz was. So a really fascinating documentary. It only runs for like around 70 minutes. So definitely something people should be seeking out.
Yeah, it's a peek into a world that we don't normally see we take into consideration when, even on this show, if we're discussing things like issues that affect the LGBTQIA plus community, it's very easy to forget, you know, that there are people that are a part of our community living in a world that is nothing like the world that we live in, complaining about Troye Sivan for
we're not we complaining, you complaining. You're the one. Troye, if you're listening, again, he's the enemy. We like you.
We all don't like him. But I love documentaries like this because they bring that visibility, and it's a reminder as you watch it that the community is bigger than our backyards, and that when we do something for the rights of LGBTQIA people, they have a trickle-down effect, and we need to be thinking about the broader worldview. So I'm really excited to see this one.
Same. Like, just watching the trailer, I was just like, what really drew me in, it was like how real and raw all of it is. Like, it's literally just a depiction of what their life is and like giving us an insight. So no, I'm very much there with you, Luke. I'm very excited to see this one.
The next movie we're talking about is a bit of a teenage love story between two handsome high school boys in America. This film, I was going to say, is it giving Love, Simon vibes? But it kind of seems a bit more serious than that.
Yeah, definitely. It's a film called Giant Little Ones, and you can actually rent it on Canopy, which I don't know if you guys know. Canopy is a streaming service that's just been made available in Australia that you get for free with any library card or university card, and it's got a huge back catalogue in there. New films, TV shows, Canopy with a K, K-A-N-O-P-Y, and yeah, all you need is a library card and you got
I'm
it.
Signing up to the library, let's go.
Find a library, but yes.
So yeah, Giant Little Ones is like a coming of age film, which, you know, like coming of age films about good looking twinks coming out of the closet are a dime a dozen. Like they make 10 of these a year. But this one I feel is a lot more nuanced than most because it refuses to put any of the characters' sexualities in a box. It's about the fluidity of sexuality, the main character kind of discovering who he was and realizing that maybe he can't put himself into a specific box. So I think that really makes it stand out. The story of it is about a teen boy who makes out with his male best friend after a drunken night.
Sounds like JB and I.
And that just like forces him to confront sexuality and his relationship with his gay father, who he kind of cut out of his life when his dad came out of the closet. And then he realizes that he might be closer to his father than he thinks.
Daddy.
I actually watched a film called Daddy recently, which was about a guy. He starts a relationship with his intern, and then he finds out that the intern was actually his biological son that he didn't realize.
That's
messed up. I'm not going to recommend that film because it's actually gross, but
I think that'll probably be the most watched film we talk about tonight. It's gonna go like that one up.
People are
Googling it people.
Right now. I know. Last week, Luke actually referred to his own father by daddy, but I'm not sure if that was on air.
Did we cut that? Because I accidentally said it again. I can't remember, but
we were all disgusted by it.
What I want to ask about this film is how come so many like gay teenage love stories, the guys are always part of swim teams? And I think it's
sports team.
It is. It's because it's the most skin showing. So
I think it's so the characters have to take their shirts off all the time. But I feel like every one of the like coming out of the closet stories I've seen in high school is they're always like
at a swim meet.
They're at a swim meet.
Look, I feel like for a lot of young gay boys, that's where they first discover tingles. They see abs and bulges.
I crack a boner whenever I smell chlorine. Seriously.
Oh my God.
I hope everyone listening does check out these films. At least hop onto YouTube and check out the trailers for each of these films.
I literally want to watch every single one of them. They all look so interesting.
The more gay content you watch, the more content gets made. You know, if we ain't watching the films, they're not going to make any more of them.
Next up, the film that we're going to chat about has been written and directed by Alice Wu. It is a Netflix teen drama with a bit of a twist, this one.
She can see dead people.
We already did that one.
Look, adaptations of Cyrano de Bergerac happen all the time. We've had like Roxanne with Steve Martin, Whatever It Takes with James Franco, The Ugly Truth with Katherine Heigl, and Netflix even did one last year called Sierra Burgess Is a Loser with Noah Centineo, which was terrible.
I didn't see that.
Oh, that one, bad, terrible.
I watched like 10 minutes and I was like, nah.
This one really stands out from the crowd. I think this is a really beautiful
I've watched
film.
This.
Did you enjoy it?
I really did. I thought it was really cute and I felt like a fresh take. And I'm glad it wasn't just like, have we said the name of it yet?
No.
The film's called The Half of It. It's about a high school jock. He hires the quiet, nerdy girl in his class to write love letters to his crush. But then the nerdy girl starts to realize that she might actually be falling for his crush as well.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that love triangle aspect to it. But also the film really centers around the friendship that forms between her and the jock.
Yeah.
And because like the film is made by an Asian American filmmaker, the film also touches on that aspect of the main character because she's like her dad's Chinese and he's moved to this small town and they're the only Asians in the town. So there's a lot more going on than you'd expect in your average teen movie.
This is the one that I like compared to Naked Swimming Teens. This one, Asian representation, I was like, I'm on board.
Yeah.
This is like, it kind of is like Clueless and things like taking a classic text and putting it in a modern context and I dig it.
And I think as a whole, like Netflix with representation has just been like killing it lately. Mm. Like queer representation and representing different races that we don't usually see, like the newer Netflix series Never Have I Ever, which is like
I love that series. Yeah. I just saw it got renewed for season 2 today.
Yeah, really exciting. Excited about that. So. yeah, good work, Netflix.
Surprisingly, the next movie that we're going to talk about is also about a water sport. But are there any, before we talk about it, Paul, are there any films you recommend about the sexual water sports? Any interesting films about?
Oh, Jesus.
wasn't that the film that you were pitching to Netflix?
There's a market for it.
It's kind of like a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids film, but it's about water sports. I'm being serious now. I'm being earnest. I'm just wondering.
I don't think I've seen any water sports centric films, but maybe that's because I probably avoid them as a rule. But
it's a valid fetish that people enjoy and a kink that I think that we've got a documentary about tickling, for Christ's sakes. Maybe we got one about water sports.
Yeah, well, I mean, listeners, if you know any good water sport films, maybe just.
Hold on, listeners, if you've made any good water sports.
Oh, no. I'm not posting the group. Send those directly to Luke.
But the next film we're talking about is actually, it's an international film. It's a French film. It's about a gay water polo team going to the gay games. And the team's called the Shiny Shrimps. This one looked fun as well. This looked like
it looked really fun.
Camp as hell.
Yes. So this is, this film's called The Shiny Shrimps, and you can watch this on Stan. It's streaming on Stan at the moment. This is, I would say, France's answer to Priscilla Queen of the Desert.
It did give me those vibes.
So it's based on a true story, and it's about like a famous swimmer who made a homophobic remark on TV, and as a punishment, the swimming corporation forces him to coach a gay water polo team. That's
You don't like the gays? Yeah, hang out with them.
They're real gay.
So when I heard the concept of this, I was like, "Oh, yeah, here we go. Here's another like queer story through the lens of a straight white character." Yeah. But the film isn't that at all. Like, the film is from the point of view of the people in the gay water polo team primarily, and it's a film that does not shy away from the queerness at all. It's really heartwarming and funny and full of, like, super fun music, and it's a road trip and a sports film, and it's just, like, a real crowd pleaser that I feel like once people actually watch it, it will become a bit of a cult hit around the queer circles. I mean, sometimes like French subtitled, it can sound like a bit of homework, but honestly, it's just such a crowd pleaser. So I would really, out of all the films that we're talking about, this is the one I'd really urge people to seek out and watch.
Really? If you're scared of subtitles, you've got to figure something out, babes. You're missing out on some good films. This looks funny. And there's lots of shirtless stuff in this film too.
Yeah.
If you need a little bit of extra.
And it's a true story as well. So it's like, you know, you're learning about.
That makes it so much cuter.
Yeah. Bring tissues as well, because you will cry at the end.
Oh my God.
Our last movie we're discussing, Back to the US. It looks a bit like trashy, fun, good viewing. It's called The Thing About Harry, starring Jake Borelli.
Yeah, so this is the one you might have to do a bit of like Luke's favorite pastime and pirate this one. It's not officially.
You do not condone this. We will not be arrested for our listeners.
but it's not officially available in Australia as yet. But this film kind of set a bit of history this year because it was the first ever queer romantic comedy TV movie from a major network. No one had actually ever done it before. So, and it really does lean into the romantic comedy tropes. Like, if this was a movie, a straight romantic comedy, this would be starring, you know, Sandra Bullock or Julia Roberts or Meg Ryan.
Catherine Heigl.
or Catherine Heigl. And it uses When Harry Met Sally as kind of like a template. It's like about two guys that hated each other in high school, and then they meet when they're like college age. It's like sparks fly, but they want to remain as friends, and then it like time jumps to every Valentine's Day. Like,
oh really?
Manage to like meet up again, and one of the guys is pansexual, so he ends up dating the other one's female best friend, and it creates all these complications. But yeah, it's super cute, fluffy, and predictable in every way.
I was just saying that you want
a romantic comedy to be.
It's so nice seeing these kind of really classic, super predictable movies and TV shows, but then nowadays with gay, like main characters in them, it just feels like safe. Like, cause you like, you've just always wanted these like your whole life, cause you've grown up with them and now you get to finally see yourself in them. And it just feels like really like heartwarming and safe and just nice. Just being able to like know that you can predict everything that's going to happen. And it just feels fun.
And like, how nice is it? Like, it was on Freeform, which is a channel in the US owned by Disney. Like, they do shows like The Bold Type and Josh Thomas's show, Everything's Gonna Be Okay. So it's like, one, a station owned by Disney, two, a station that's targeted at teen audiences, and they're making like unabashedly queer content, putting it in prime time. This was their big Valentine's Day release. The film also has a cameo from Karamo, who plays a daddy in it that one of them dates briefly.
Yeah, he does. Okay, well, I'm 100% old now.
Do the wrong thing and seek it out in Australia.
Just find some other means, wink, wink.
Usually I'd say fly over to America, watch it and come back. You can't even do that right now.
Has anyone watched Love, Victor?
No,
I watched all of it like a couple of days ago. I thought it was like, that's what I was referring to when I say it's just really nice and cute predictability.
Yeah, I loved it.
I really liked it.
And they don't make enough. They don't. You guys are happy we're getting these queer romance stories. I want more queer horror films. I want more.
Oh, absolutely. Bring it on.
I mean, every day in our lives is a queer horror film. You have enough.
Well, Paul, this has been really, really fun. So thank you so much for coming on the show tonight.
No worries. Have me back anytime.
Of course.
We could do it like regular, like a movie, you know, and then when we can have popcorn in the room.
And then you can give me another lift home, Paul.
Yeah, for sure. I'm also like have an Uber service, so.
Next time, don't let me go off into the night with strangers.
I both know that I'm not going to stop you. Like, that's a force that cannot be stopped.
How did that even happen? I didn't know any of those people. But thank you so much. It's so fun to talk film, and we've got. I love being able to share with our listeners some queer content, what they can be checking out. Speaking of queer content, please do check out Paul's podcast, The Swapcast Podcast, and it's wherever you listen to us, you can listen to that. So
you can swap podcasts.
Do it.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Britt East is an author and speaker who uses his experiences to challenge and inspire change-oriented gay men to get down to the business of improving their lives. His new book, A Gay Man's Guide to Life, is a resource for gay men who've experienced societal homophobia to put in the work to live their best lives. Britt, thank you so much for joining us all the way from Seattle.
Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, super exciting.
Now, Britt, in your book, you've addressed many of the struggles that gay men face, and you've provided actionable information to change the way that gay men approach life. What are sort of like some of the obstacles do you think that are standing in the way of achieving happiness for gay men?
You know, I think the single largest one is we have, as gay men, we have spent most of our lives living a lie, frankly. We grow up isolated and alone because even the most well-intended parents do not raise gay kids, culturally speaking, I mean. So we have to find our own way in the world. We have to find our gay peers. We have to learn about our gay culture and cobble that together with our own two hands. Mm. And one of the inevitable unintended consequences is that we learn to put on a series of masks to hide from the world, to keep people from harming us, hurting us, abusing us, and ultimately knowing us. And that has led to an epidemic of loneliness because what those tactics, while they may serve us as children, eventually they turn into obstacles and they prevent us from being vulnerable, seen and known and loved. And so we then wonder why we have trouble finding a spouse or a partner. We wonder why we move from one transactional sexual relationship to another. And so I think one of the things in this book that I challenge gay men to do is to really get to know themselves, to take a fearless moral inventory, look at themselves in the mirror, figure out who they are, and then go be it. Go be themselves with all their might, shine with as brightly as possible. You know, that's really the greatest gift that any of us has to offer the world.
Absolutely. Totally.
You also grew up in Tennessee and describe it as a place where intellectuals were punished and their differences were destroyed. You describe having to learn how to slink in the shadows, something you call narrowcasting. Could you talk a bit about gay men's tendency to do that?
Yeah. You know, I think we all kind of carve out our own space in this world. And the route I chose was one of middling achievement, meaning I did not dare shine too brightly and I did not dare fall too far so that I could kind of fall through the cracks, but on purpose, because I was so desperately afraid to be seen. Which was ironic because I also really wanted to be known and loved. So I was in this paradox. I was trapped in this paradox. And that was reinforced by the culture at large. 1980s Tennessee was a place where homogeneity was a virtue. And like I said, differences were destroyed. And it wasn't just being gay. All sorts of differences were destroyed if you were intellectual or artistic or what have you. So I learned how to straddle multiple worlds, but to my detriment, myself never formed. So as an adult, I had to go back and do that on my own.
Yeah. That's the thing, because like there's so much that you learn, well, self-learn as a child that you don't realize until you're an adult, that you're just like, oh, hang on a second, this isn't a healthy thing. I probably need to unpack all of this. And so many of us as gay men don't even have the strength to do that. So I think having a book like what you've written is such an amazing thing to put out there. So you've also described having joined a 12-step program for codependency during a turbulent relationship. What did you learn about the way that you approach romantic love?
I learned I was completely unprepared because I did not have that foundation. I expected my partner at the time to be my everything. We were the same age and we'd been together for ultimately 7 years. We stayed together for quite a while. And this was in the early 90s before I was really even done, you know, a monogamous relationship in our early 20s at that age. And unknowingly, I expected him to be my guide, my mentor, my teacher. And it was patently unfair. I just thrust all these expectations on him without even realizing I was doing it because I was so desperate to be joined in this world. And what that meant is inevitably there was a downfall, as would happen in any relationship. In our case, the downfall was traumatic because he was arrested for having sex with a minor. And it just exploded my world like an atom bomb dropping on my world. It leveled my very existence. Mm. And I decided to stay with him, not out of forgiveness or altruism, but out of desperate longing, because mm-hmm. I was so codependent. I had such an excessive emotional reliance on him and the relationship. I really had nowhere to turn. And by some miracle, he got into a 12-step program for sex addiction, because it turned out he was having lots of sex. And this is before that term was even really used in the public that much. This was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And by another miracle, it turns out there was a companion program called Codependence to Sex Addicts. So I watched him get in his 12-step program, and he started to get better, and I got mm-hmm. livid. I was so resentful watching him heal and learn to love himself. So I thought, I'll show him, I'll get into my own. It was a miracle. Yeah, because the first time in my life, I started to get real. For sure. I took off the mask and I started to be myself, and in these rooms holding hands with these beautiful broken people who were just like me, sharing our darkest secrets. And I realized that I'm not alone, and I can be myself. And that's where I found my voice. So what I learned about love is that, of course, like has become a cliche since, or maybe always was, you have to love yourself first before you can love anybody else.
Absolutely.
And you've also described yourself, as many of us and gay men in general, having an awful relationship with your body in the past. In what ways have you kind of reconciled those negative feelings?
You know, my body was the first thing I ever hated about myself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was what betrayed me. It was my body that was lusting after all these boys. It was my body that was swishy and feminine and that made me a sissy. My voice, my swishy gestures. It was my body that was a threat to my very life. Think what that does to you.
Yeah.
You guys know, of course, but for your listeners who don't, it fractures your life. It permanently distorts the contours of your life until you go back and heal that core woundedness. And so my body became a repository for my self-hate. And I bought into the beauty myth, and I knew that I was not a part of it. Mm. Even with all of my privileges, even with all my good fortune, I still hated the way that I looked, like so many gay men do. I looked in the mirror and I hated everything about myself. And none of it really had to do with my physical features. It was all an inside job. Mm-hmm. And so I had to go back and learn how to love myself. And that happened through yoga. It happened through sitting together in community with people and sweating it out and mm-hmm. working out all those years of toxins. And it felt like almost a kind of a dance, these yoga classes. And I felt beautiful for the first time in my life. And nobody said anything. Nobody was looking at me. Everybody was just doing their own thing. It was all about me all along.
Yeah, because it's yoga's a form of meditation. So mm-hmm. like you really are just with yourself and your own thoughts.
God,
and
it gives you that space to yoga.
It's not a bad idea. It works for many people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, sort of the topic of friendship between gay men is also something that you've written about. What's sort of your take on that?
Well, you know, I want straight people to understand that gay culture is intrinsically different. We have our own unique culture, and we love it, and it's something to be celebrated. And one of the beautiful things about our culture is that friends become lovers and lovers become friends. And there's all sorts of reasons for that, but it's wonderful. It's wonderful. We don't have those same narrow life scripts that a lot of straight people feel beholden
heteronormative,
to.
Heteronormative,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's something that's really beautiful. And we also have our struggles as a culture with friendship. And because we are often, you know, we don't deal with in America, we have the When Harry Met Sally kind of cliche based on that movie that says that men and women can't be friends because sex gets in the way.
Yeah.
Well, because of gay culture, we don't really have that. But what we do have is internalized homophobia.
Yeah.
And what we do have is cruising. And it leads to two different dynamics. One is that dynamic of twinning, where if I find somebody who looks like me and might be into what I'm into, then we can work a room together. So it's a utilitarian transactional friendship, not based on mutual love or respect, but more based on appetite and preference. And so it becomes a kind of usury at its worst. Oof. And what we also have is a kind of misogyny based on our internalized homophobia, where we hate what we describe, at least inwardly, as feminine. These culturally constituted gendered terms which do nothing but belittle those parts of us that are unique and divine, we often self-immolate. And then invariably, we turn that outwardly to our friends. If we meet femininity in ourselves that we loathe, and we see those in other gay men, then it can adversely impact our friendships.
For sure.
Wow. And then the last dynamic is racism. In the US, racism among gay people is rampant and repugnant. You would think that we would know better because we're the victims of so much bias and stigma. But, you know, based on my research, if it could be quantified, I am ashamed to say that I feel like gay men are just about the most racist segment of any society of our society in the US. And it's really a shame. And we're really just enslaving ourselves to our own fear and self-loathing. And we're really the ones losing out. We're the ones missing out.
Absolutely.
Totally. On the topic of racism, like, we gay men owe so many of civil rights to people of color and women too. Yeah. Yet there's still all these gender and racial prejudices floating about in our community.
Yes. I'm so glad that you said that, because we just had a major legal victory in the US called Title VII, which says that it's now illegal for any employer to discriminate based on your sexual orientation and your gender orientation, which is amazing. But what people may not know is that there's a direct through line between that new right that's been granted us, because before it was a really fractured, uneven, state-driven system of laws. Now it's been federated. But there's a through line between that and the Civil Rights Act in 1965. And so that's just one small example, but really almost every piece of gay rights legislation has some through line to the civil rights struggle for Black Americans. Mm-hmm. Moral issues notwithstanding, if you're only purely self-interested and cynical, it still behooves us to lift up others of different races. But, you know, I think in terms of what we witness today, it occurs from everything from the fearing and fetishizing of Black genitalia to the abject rejection of Asian men. Mm-hmm. And you see this play out every day on hookup apps.
Oh, yeah.
Purely absolutely. Transactional statements. Yeah. You see this play out in Instagram pages with photos of lots of shirtless white guys.
Yeah.
People don't realize the unintended consequences and harm they're doing both to their own lives and to the community at large, what people of color feel and see when they encounter those images. And, you know, at least in America, white people tend to project a fantasy land that they pour themselves into about how everything is really nice because it's convenient for them, not realizing that it's just a matter of privilege. And so what we can do is we can shop at minority-owned businesses. We can be friends with people of color. We can date them, not because they're people of color, but because that's the inevitable consequence when two souls meet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before you mentioned the how in the United States it got ruled that you can't be fired anymore for your sexual orientation. In Australia, religious organizations are actually exempt from similar discrimination laws. Mm. Is that the case in the US?
Not yet, but the laws are dynamic and there's court challenges all the time. And on the ground, really, at least in the US, any employer can fire you for anything that they want. And sure, you have the potential for legal recourse and you might recoup lost wages, but that could take years. And you have to find an attorney who's willing to go on that path with you and maybe even work pro bono. So on the ground, it's still very problematic. We have not changed any hearts or minds with this legislation, even though it's a huge victory and milestone step forward. And like you imply, there's all sorts of potential legal challenges in the works. As we're sitting here, I'm sure there are conservative religious-based organizations around the country, just like with the right to abortion, who are figuring out how they can start to chip away and challenge this law in all sorts of lower courts. So the fight is never done.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talk a lot about unity in the LGBTQIA+ community, but why does our community sometimes feel so tenuous? And how would you explain some of the fragmentations that we see in it?
I have lots of theories about it. You know, I think that in a lot of ways, we are just not a natural fit.
Yeah.
When you start to see us through a cultural lens as opposed to a sexual orientation lens, you realize that culturally gay men and lesbians don't necessarily have a ton in common intrinsically. And then when you fold in trans people on top of that, who could be gay or straight or, yeah, or anything in between, it's a very diverse coalition, which, don't get me wrong, makes it beautiful and will makes it stronger. But it does mean that it's incumbent upon us to learn each other's languages, so to speak, to get together with other people in the community, be they intersex or on the ace spectrum or transgendered or lesbian or pansexual, or gay, to come together from all walks of life and get to know each other. Because if we don't understand each other, how can we expect straight people to understand us? There's just no way.
For sure.
Yeah.
Britt, I want to say a very big thank you for coming on the show today and discussing with us your ideas. It's been really, really nice chatting with
you. Fascinating stuff.
Where can people pick up a copy of your book?
Well, first of all, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to talk with you as well. I love Australia. I haven't been to Australia in about 5 years, but I had a blast when I was there. So it's great to talk to you guys. So my website is really the hub for all of my work, britteast.com. And you can find my social media profiles there. I have a free blog. I have free articles that I publish. And that's also where you can buy my book. It's got a link to where you can find it on Amazon. And as we get on additional e-tailer sites, it'll be there as well. But that's really the best place to go to find all of my work.
Oh, gosh, that was a fun episode, guys.
I
hope that soon we're back in the studio so I can see your smiling faces.
Sing at us awkwardly.
Keep the songs coming. But thank you to our listeners who have supported us through our Patreon. And
love you guys.
Love you guys. Mm-hmm. We've got some juicy after show content. Mm-hmm. Since Tom's gone, we have
free reign.
It's about Drag Race.
It's fully going to be the longest after show ever. It's like 2 hours long.
Look, I've got nothing on. It's fine. We're actually just going to watch an episode together and comment on it. But yeah, don't forget to subscribe to all our socials. You should know what they all are by now on Instagram. And if you haven't subscribed to our after show, you should definitely do that on our Patreon.
And thank you to our guests for...
Thanks to our awesome guests this week. So much fun. Really
so fun interviews. This was a fun episode.
It was nice.
And fun, informative, loved it.
Fun, informative, loved it. That should be on a t-shirt.
It's like the live, laugh, love, but forget it. Like,
gay. That's amazing.
Sexuality. Oh my
God, this is something.
I'll see you guys in Untucked, eh? In the Untucked.
Yes.
You win a beer. In the Golden Lounge.
Bye.
Bye. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are...
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, where are you, the police?
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.